Batter number 11106, Mr. T. Wilson, reel 6.
Mr. T. Wilson, reel 6. Whilst you were at Blackdown, Mr. Wilson, you were doing manoeuvres and exercises. What was your role in those activities?
Well, you're doing it, and then you like battalion training, brigade training, and divisional training, things like that. Well, being machine gunners, you were sent to do support. Well, you'll be given a map reference, and you'd occupy that place there, and you're told to stay there. Then the chaps what was doing, umpires and things like that, they're more or less in charge of all the manoeuvres. But as a machine gunner, you didn't move around a lot. You're more or less in fixed position. You know, like a supporting, which is what it means, you were a supporting role. That means you're supporting a certain area, and well, if you were wiped out, well, they use flags and things like that and jotting things down. Well, you know, they'd say, well, this machine gun post has got in command of that view, you know, of the maneuvers as they maneuvered around. And the companies, well, they were more or less, but we were put in position and stayed out, no place to them, more or less.
What types of firing actions did you go into? I'm thinking in terms of there's fixed lines fire, and what are the types? So what was fixed lines fire?
Well, when you have fixed lines fire, you're more or less in charge of it. But when you're in one of the different control fire, what's called cross lines. You know, where fire operates from one side to the other, one side to the other, to be among three or four different machine guns, all under one command of a fellow, number one section, number two section, number three section, number four section. That's the way to go on, see? That means the whole platoon would be involved in that.
And did you always fire at a target or...?
No, never. You never fired no ammunition at all. Never fired no ammunition at all on manoeuvres. You were just there as representatives as a said item, that would do a said job. There was no live ammunition ever fired with a machine gun on those type of manoeuvres, never. The only live ammunition you ever fired is when you do a demonstration, a demonstration shoot for the higher-ups, things like that. But on manoeuvres, never.
When you were at Kattrick, you would exercise and manoeuvre on your own. In effect, you didn't have any work with other services. Were you bringing in other services in the manoeuvres in Blackdown area?
Yes. Well, you ended up like a division. You know, like a division at the finish. You know, you start up company training, battalion training, brigade training, and division training and things like that.
Well, that bringing in artillery as well.
Yes, well, I mean, we never saw that type of work. Like, but was bringing the all issue in what was the combined closing up. And that was would occupy was somewhere near the end of the year, October or something like that, on, you know, or before the bad weather set in. You'd do Salisbury Plain and, you know, different places like that.
You still weren't working with tanks or aircraft?
No, no. There's only once we went in aircraft, that was at Farnborough, and then it was experimental with regard to troop carrier, you know, a lift of troops, and just experimental and back the barracks again, and nothing getting becoming. So many went in the aircraft and just flew around with it, and said that was capable of trying aircraft out. That was the only time I ever touched any aircraft.
Did you fly with the aircraft?
Yes, we all. You got like a blue paper bag. To be, if you were sick in it, you know, if you wanted to be sick, well, the blue paper bag for you was to be sick, if you wanted to, but with nothing.
And the idea was to use the aircraft to fly you from one place to the to another.
If required, but it was only like a short demonstration, really, that that was capable of being doing so. That was operated from Farnborough.
Is there anything else you want to say about Blackdown while you were there, Mr. Wilson?
Well, the most interesting thing what I saw was the church parade, being as a light infantry, and we marched very quick, you know, that it was. And then when we come out of the church, you just form up, and there's only simple words of command straight away because everybody knew what they had to do. You know, form, force, and things like that, and we'll be tired if you got, you know, next to the wrong fella. You fell in the next fella because he had form, force, and that. He was and just whip, swift words of command, and away like shot. And it was amazing, the public, they seemed to take a great interest in it, because the other ones are all engineers, and artillery, well, they just slouch away there, easy as wink. Always the church prayer was quite interesting for the civilians to watch. Well, we were used to it, you know, because you do a lot of training, and that's completely automatic.
How often do you have church parade?
Every Sunday. Every Sunday.
And were men split up if they were of a different denomination to...
Yes.
To England?
Majority of people were CBs. And then, after being regarded Roman Catholics, were they taken down to... There wasn't quite a lot of Roman Catholics in the Dunhams. But the chaps used to say they were Salvation Armies, but still they got hooked in with the C of E's.
So the split was basically Roman Catholic? And
oh, the Roman Catholic, they definitely went to their own church. There wasn't a great deal of them. No. Being about no more than 20 or 30 at the most of them. There wasn't like a parade of them. And the chaps just marched them down and marched them back again.
After you'd finished your church parade on a Sunday, was the rest of the day open for yourselves?
Sunday, yes, I would say yes it was. There was nothing else to do, because the chaps who wanted to do fatigue wasn't allocated to go to the church, because there's always the clean up the barracks to do, and the sport peeling and different things like that. And the officers must be cleaned out, sergeant must be cleaned out. But certain ones were allocated on detail for church parade. And after that parade, more or less, after 12 o'clock, everything was your own the next Monday morning.
And how did you fill that time in?
Well, you could either go on to playing fields and things like that, or get yourself ready if you're going out on a Sunday night down there in the name places, such as Cambly, which was very near, for to get down to Cambly. Or, as I say, if the bus was going to Reading, you go on. Yeah, I'd say if you had any money to spare for to do so, which always wasn't too often. But you should make an effort for to do it.
The time had come then when you were obviously due to go abroad. How did that come about?
Well, there's always that, what they call the medical inoculations and things like that before you go abroad. Well, I mean, that takes time for the medical staff to get through the whole regiment. And then you'll get in a small inoculation, about 25% of the regional one, and the second one was 75%. Well, if you go, when you come to that inoculation of 75%, you were allowed to lie on your bed. Because they used to knock the fellas out, that one did. You know, the first one was easy, but the second one knocked even strong fellas out. And then the working setting party, they'd want an advance party to get on the docks at Southampton before the regiment was really to move straight in. Well, luckily, you that photograph I saw here, what was in the Northern Echo, that was part of the advance party. We were there about a fortnight with the luggage in that coming, acting as stevedores, helping to put the bulk of the stuff on the ship. So therefore, when the regiment was to get embarked on the ship, they just marched straight on with the normal kit what they were carrying.
How did you feel about going abroad?
Well, for the first time being abroad, and also they used to say before, "Oh, here's your soldier abroad," and things like that. You more or less was looking forward to it.
And your family, how did they take the news?
Oh, just took it part of the routine that you were in, and whatever was good, and what was bad was bad. You stood your groundwork.
Had you had embarkation leave?
Yes, you got a small leave before on everybody. You know, all that takes time of getting the leave, getting inoculations and medical part, and then the packing up of the kit and things like that. But they've got a system which works out very well. You know, I mean, everything's laid down and thought out, and it goes smooth. There's no doubt about the forces when they do things like that.
Had you been issued with special kit?
Yes, you've all issued with two sets of tropical kit. That's what, the KD shorts, shirt, slacks, topi, and all sorts of that.
Did the topi have a badge on it, the regimental badge?
It had a flash on the side, DLI, like a green badge in red letters, DLI.
And your other equipment, your webbing and so forth, was that still the same?
Oh, yes, that was still the same. Your webbing and your rifle and things like that, that was all the same.
As it approached, were you given lectures or talks about where you're going and how to go on?
Well, you were, because you want to do no training at all and things like that, and there's more or less a slack period, and there's always something coming up for a lecture. The MO would give a lecture, the parson would give a lecture and things like that. The CO would, when you come to commander, would have you all tell you what they expect of you, what they expect to meet of you. You know, and when you'll be going and things like that. They kept you well informed what you had to do.
Were they talking to you about how to behave out there and how to get on with civilians or otherwise?
Yes, they were cautious, saying that they didn't require any trouble to be caused. And the name of the regiment come first, and woe betide any man who disobeyed. And you had to keep the good name, you know, was bred into you more or less, to keep the good name of the regiment up.
And were you warned against the dangers of the young ladies out there?
Not until we really were abroad, and then that was every week. It wasn't a week went by. The medical officer, he slaughtered you, things you would never repeat. Because he's talking to men, which was for your own fault, because they knew all about it, more or less. But really, as regards the venereal disease and women and things like that, majority of us were ignorant because it wasn't even tolerated or mentioned. You know, we were all innocent, really, but we thought it was a horrible thing. We've heard about it, but to be amongst us and things like that, never. But when you're abroad, by heavens, you've got to even what water you drink, never mind out.
Do you recall what date that you left abroad, left the country?
Well, I think it'll be somewhere near about October.
This will be what year?
1937. We went out to Shanghai to do the concessions, our British concessions. Because the Japanese were coming down, then the Yankees had their concessions, the Italians had their concessions, the French had their concessions, so there's quite a lot of mixed up and people you never met before in your life.
The boat that you left on, what was it called?
The boat was the Dilwara.
Did you have a send-off?
Well, no, normally where everybody was sent off, you know, the old Lang Syne and such as that. And some of the lads waving the naffy girls and things like that. It was quite good, but that made no difference who you were. The boat was sailing, you were going on it, and that was it.
What were the con- conditions like on board?
Well, it was easy because your area was restricted. But you're still doing your more or less physical exercises for to keep fit. And then daily with board drill, everybody had to know the positions, where they go to, what part they go to, and things like that. And then, you know, the light, with the life jackets and things like that, how that was taking part of the routine of being on board the ship.
What were the conditions below decks where he was living and sleeping?
Quite good. The boat was spotless. It was, the deal, whatever, was a real clean ship, right throughout, and was kept that way. There were foreign seamen, coloured ones, Alaskas, they weren't like an English crew, they were beyond the high hopes, but they were what they call the native crew, Alaskas, I think, they were some kind. But they had a number one boy in charge of them, and they used to do the work and used to disappear. Well, they used to disappear to the Lord only knew. But they'd see them work and then disappear. They were more or less keep the bulk of the ship clean. And then with the parts we lived in, well, it was just like big dining halls, you know. I think there'd be about three decks on the deal, water. I said, what do you mean with three decks?
What were you sleeping on?
Yeah, the hammocks. It's quite a fun to get used to, one of those.
They're difficult to get used to?
Yes, but it was quite fun. And normally you spend a lot of time in your hammock when the hammocks were down, because every morning had to be rolled up and put aside, being then done as your dining room and for to get your meals in. And on the evening, time where they get them down, everybody put them up, and with leisure time all the time I got in hammock. Quite good to sleep when you get used to them.
Did you have to keep your deck clean, or did the crew?
No, the crew kept the deck clean. The only parts we more or less kept clean was the old living quarters.
And how did you keep them clean?
The NCOs would be in charge of a certain number of fellas. Some would clean the tables down, some would clean the floor, and different things like that. All duties were allocated to different personnel.
And were they subject to inspection?
Definitely.
And who did the inspections?
Ship's captain. But your commanding officer, because on the deal water there was more than just the DLI. There was other contingents of troops, people dropping off at Port Said, Bombay, Singapore, different types of assignment of troops, dropping off the different stations. And I think we were the last ones on board because we were going to Shanghai.
Was he easy to please, the captain?
We never saw much of him, but I would say it was an easy-going ship. Life wasn't too hard on it. No, it was... Your leisure time was... Well, it took up doing a bit washing and things like that for yourself, you know. And when you're on board the ship, you're off at Port Said. Then you'd have a route march. You know, you had to get ready for a route march and just march off, march down, march back on again. But the same when you got to Bombay, you'd have a same. Then when you got to Singapore, you'd have the same procedure. Then I think from Singapore, just straight up the coast on to Shanghai.
As you got into the hotter climates, did the conditions worsen on board the ship?
Well, with the heat. Once you say, we'll say you pass through the Red Sea, you seem to seem the climate getting warmer then. When you get past through the Red Sea, then not to Singapore and things like that. Well, the portholes, the out of some shape thing when the boat was going forward, and there was a catch of wind, they shoved through the porthole, and it used to blow decks and things like that. It used to blow air, cold air, with the ship travelling into the ship.
You've mentioned that you did PE training. So
oh yes, definitely.
Did you do weapon training on board?
Very little. You'd have rifle inspections, really, for say that your arms and that were kept up to standard. Oh yes, you'd have often a rifle inspection to say that it wasn't neglected, because I mean, if you put a thing aside and things like that, and then the emergency time confront you, use it in a case of emergency, and it always had to be kept clean, and what was your own responsibility. But the rifle inspections was only for more or less for to keep part of the time and occupy it as well.
Other than cleaning your own decks, were there other fatigues that you were given for doing things on board the ship?
Very little. There was maybe certain types of guard duties required, and you know, for on the night time, because there's different people, married personnel and things like that, and you'd probably put on guard at certain that no one had to pass, unauthorized person had to pass that spot. You know, I just warned them about in the married quarters and things like that, but to avoid any troubles. There's different types of guards put on.
What was the food like on the ship?
Quite good. As a matter of fact, once you board the ship, being a soldier, you seem to be, you get more when you're on board the ship, and especially if you're with the Navy. You know, I always like that. Some fellas, they were seasick. Would they get over that?
Did you have a canteen of some kind?
Yes, there was a nappy. It was open, certain times of being open, you know. So you could purchase your cigarettes or tobacco, what you required. Then on the night time, maybe about 6 years together, club together, and get the, what you used to get your tea and things like that, with all about 3 or 4 gallon of beer. Amongst us, go and get it, club up, it cost so much to get it filled, instead of everybody going down with a pint glass. And you used to, 10 years, maybe 10 years or 8 years or 6 years, share that amount of beer out between you. But the beer was very soft. Yes, it was soft.
And what other leisure activities did you have to do? Because it was a long journey and must have been times quite boring.
Well, that's it. You're doing boat sail every day, you're doing PT every day, you've got regular rifle inspections, and then there were different organised games at times. So you see some fellas run round and round and round the deck, you know, they run round and round and round. Maybe for a couple of hours, things like that. Well, all your time was passing all right. You want to keep the... So you sat in the hole all the time. Oh no, you were kept busy.
When did you arrive in Shanghai?
Well, I think we arrived in Shanghai about 8 weeks later, because just before the Christmas, more or less. Maybe somewhere in the first week in December or the last week in November, I think so.
What's the impression of the place?
Well, when you landed, you more or less marched straight to the area you're going to, which was like a college, really. You enrolled schools, well, like a university, and that was termed the barracks for us. Because quite a big place at UU enrolled schools. They set up a bit of, no, normal nappy, which always was set up for you, really. Well, the Royal Army Service, that type of equipment, they just, so many sawyer stoves, you know, whether it's the coal stoves and that, and they got all that equipment and they just make a certain area as a cookhouse and things like that for you.
You marched from the boat, you said, to the schools.
Oh, yes.
Was there any civilian interest? As you came
well,
the streets.
Not that we will recognise, because our eyes are flying around at the different signs and things like that and looking at the different people. But it was interesting to get settled down in the school.
What was your accommodation like in the school?
Quite all right. It wasn't flash beds, little small beds, or maybe you might be lying on some, might be lying on floor. But it was quite good. And then they got split up. The battalion got split up. You know, some went to Peking. You know, certain companies went to Peking. Certain companies went to Tsing. You know, then that's where they were operating from.
And what happened to you?
Well, I went to Peking and Tsing Sing. I chose the duty at both places, Tsing Sing and Peking. And they are very interesting places to see.
The accommodation, you said, was quite reasonably well at the school. How long were you in the school?
Not very long, actually. No, not very long. No, let's think of that now. Been so long times, and you know, you kind of get the actual period of time, and see, all you can remember that the area you were there. Then you move to another area, and then you move to another area. But regards getting actual dates, they're nearly impossible.
Was the food changing, or was an Oriental food coming into your diet?
Yes, there was a lot of catering done by the Chinese, which is quite good. You know, it's money for them doing so. Because I can remember when we first went down, there was that small sausage for breakfast. And the types of sausage, what they were selling, just progged them, and they were all water, and they shrunk down to nothing, just slung up the road. And then you got quite a lot of pork, you know, see, pork chops and things like that, because they're quite a lot of that, and chickens and things like that, in the battalion diet. But you felt more safe where it's in the bully. You know, you did really. But the Chinese, when you did go out in time, could provide some quite good meals, aren't you? The stuff, a meal wasn't there, or a drink wasn't there, no. It wasn't really there. Well, the Chinese themselves hadn't a lot of money. And now, the money we got, it seemed to go a long way. Father than what it did in England.
Had it been increased because of being abroad?
No. You had a fixed rate what you really own. Now, if you own 3 and 9 a day, that was about the average private then, 3 and 9 a day.
Were you still doing your same duties and cleaning and stuff, or were the Chinese keeping the areas that you were living in clean? Did they have Chinese servants around? Or workers?
Not in the barracks, no.
So you still have the same cleaning duties?
Definitely, all the cleaning duties. You might get an old lady mending the fellow's socks and things like that, or you get the Chinese doing the laundry. And you know, do the battalion laundry or the company laundry, whatever it was. Ling Sing, I think they call it, chubby time. You had your Indian contractors still with you, like Shamsuddin. He used to do there. The chaps used to do the haircutting and the tailoring. You know, mending your uniforms, altering your uniforms, or doing all anything so much required.
These were Indians, did you say?
Indians. Well, they were contractors, and they followed all regiments.
So no matter which country you're in, the Indian contractors did these duties?
That's right. While in peacetime. Because I can remember even when we were digging further back, the port said, the Indian contact was right to murder me through. You know, when we first kicked off, and I heard the bombers were coming over, the native chap was saying, one haircut left, that means he's only going to cut one more hair and he's going to be off. And he says, there's only one haircut left. But that's when... Yeah, you always had this Indian contractors with you.